Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. We've all heard the phrase, you are what you eat. Simply defined, that means we should eat healthy if we want to be healthy. The food we consume is the building blocks for our nerves, bones, blood, organs, and hormones. Eating the right kind of food has the power to heal, but the wrong choices can harm the body. Today we have Dr. Michael Murray, renowned naturopathic physician and leading expert in diet, nutrition, and alternative medicine. His latest book is called The Magic of Food, which shares how diet can profoundly impact your body, mind, and health. Don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one best-selling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is one of the world's leading authorities on natural medicine. He's the author of more than 30 books, including the acclaimed bestsellers, The Encyclopedia of Natural Medicine and The Encyclopedia of Healing Foods. In addition to his books, which have cumulative sales of over 6 million copies, he's written thousands of articles, appeared on hundreds of radio and TV programs, including Dr. Oz, and is a sought-after speaker. He's the person that researchers, educators, and doctors go to when they want answers. I've been a fan of his for a very long time, and I'm excited to have him on the show today to discuss his new book, The Magic of Food. Please welcome Dr. Michael Murray.
Oh, David, it's fantastic to join you on this podcast. It's awesome.
Oh, it's such an honor having you. You know, you've been a mentor of mine. As I mentioned, I'm a big fan going back to when I was just learning the beginning ropes of nutrition. So it's great to have you here. Share with us the meaning behind the title, Magic of Food. What inspired you to write it?
Oh, thank you. Here's the thing. I believe that nature is the greatest technology in the universe, and the way in which we commune with nature on a daily basis is through the food that we eat.
Right.
And Sir Arthur Clarke, who wrote 2001: A Space Odyssey, has a great quote. He says that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, and we're just starting to understand the technology that's in food and how it works within our system to promote health and healing if we choose the right food. So my book is a collection of this kind of cutting edge science, but written in a way that everyone can understand it and appreciate it and hopefully be inspired to take advantage of the magic of food.
That's awesome. I know in your book you explore foods that bring good health and longevity, and you put together what you call a synergistic diet and meal plan. Tell us about that.
Well, what we're learning about diet and health is that we need to have a lot of diversity in our diet because there's synergistic effects between the various food components.
And right.
That means is that it's not a 1 + 1 = 2. 1 + 1 may equal 10 or 20 in terms of the health benefits. And so what I tried to do was explain how these different food compounds work together to really put a constellation of health available to us. And it's not just one thing. We can't just eat one right. food or do one thing and expect to see the same effects compared to eating a collection of health-giving foods and, you know, doing all the other things that we need to do right to have good health.
Right. I know the old popular saying is variety is the spice of life, and it's also something you recommend when it comes to dieting. I know in Chapter 8, you talk about how people that eat a variety of different foods are less overweight. Share why that is. Why is eating a different variety of foods keep us from getting obese?
Wow. There's many different reasons why, and even more information since I wrote the book. But in the book, I was really focusing on kind of the direct effects of different food compounds in enhancing our metabolism, activating key enzymes that really determine our body composition, and helping to burn fat and kind of rev up our metabolism. But since then, there's really been a big focus on the microbiome, and I'm sure your listeners are familiar with that term. It refers to the collection of genetic material from microbes that reside in our, in this case, gastrointestinal tract. So the gut microbiome is a key area of focus, and we know that thin people have a different gut microbiome than obese people, and one of the key differences is that in healthy people, the microbiome is very diverse. It's kind of like an Amazon rainforest. And right. That diversity seems to play a huge role in helping our metabolism and helping us control our appetite, helping insulin work better, and a number of other mechanisms that really make achieving and maintaining our weight goals possible. So one of the biggest determinants of microbial diversity in our gut is the diversity of foods in our diet. If you're eating the same foods over and over and over again, and that's what many people that are overweight do, that lack of diversity leads to an overgrowth of bacteria in our gut that actually keep promoting us to eat in a certain way and kind of feed the monster within us, which is, the fat cells and this microbiome.
Right. And so it's interesting because, you know, varieties really helps with all other assets, avenues like weightlifting. They say don't do the same old routine. A lot of people do, you know, biceps on this specific day and triceps on this day, and they hit a plateau, and they're told to mix it up because it actually responds better. Marriage counselors, they say, you know, married couples, if it's the same old, you know, they tend to want to break up because it's not exciting. So you just made that statement for the biomes and the food. It makes sense.
It sure does. And, with your background in neurology, that we need lots of different stimuli to keep that nervous system in engaged and active.
That's so true. I know you and I discussed a couple of weeks ago the science, how it's constantly changing, and what we're told is good for us one week is bad for us the next week. And you are considered the go-to when it comes to scientific literature on food and dietary supplements. I'm curious, what have you found that has stood the test of time and science when it comes to what we should and shouldn't be eating? Is there something that you can go back 30 years ago and say it's still true?
Yeah, well, there's a... I think the basics are still there. You have to eat to control blood sugar. You have to eat a variety of richly colored fruits and vegetables. You have to get the right type of fat in your diet. And for many people, that means reduce the intake of animal foods. You have to stay away from heavily processed foods. And you got to drink enough water every day. I mean, those are the basics. It definitely stood the test of time. Other things I fell into the trap that a lot of us did 30 years ago, with, you know, eating more complex carbs and whole grains and whole grain pastas and breads and all that sort of thing. And, nowadays I look at grains a little differently. I think that they were really important as we were really burning a lot of calories in different eras of our existence. But now, I prefer to get my calories elsewhere, and I really, really load up on these richly colored fruits and vegetables. I think that goal of, you know, hitting at least 5 servings of vegetables a day and 2 servings of fruit, right. And a serving is defined as 1 cup uncooked or 1/2 cup cooked. That is still as true today as it was 30 years ago.
True. So really, grains have changed. I know there's so much unbiased research showing the health benefits of grains, like combating diabetes, heart disease, digestion, even cancer. And now we are in the anti-grain movement, and experts saying grains cause these diseases. So is it really just stay away from grains now, or is there select type that's still good for us?
I think there's select types that are still good for us. And I think that in moderation, they're fine. It's really that they became so out of balance, and it was fine when we were burning a ton of calories every
right.
day, but now they just they can really lead us to a domino effect that leads to abdominal weight gain and insulin resistance, and ultimately obesity and type 2 diabetes. So I think that eating them on a very sparing basis is really the best way to go these days, and I think there are a lot of reasons for that for our health.
I know that's strange. I know, you know, Hippocrates is known as the father of medicine. He said, "Let thy food be thy medicine." And then the father of creation says in the Bible, fruit will be for food and their leaves for healing. Then Big Pharma had to step in and ruin it all by saying, "Let expensive drugs with side effects be thy medicine." In your book, you bring us back to our roots, pun intended. What are some examples you've discovered when it comes to food as medicine?
Oh my gosh. In my book is full of countless examples where food can be a very effective therapy for, you know, various medical conditions. I remember when I was going through naturopathic medical school in the 80s, and juicing was a really big phenomenon. And I came across these studies that were done in the 1950s at Stanford Medical School on cabbage juice being an effective treatment for peptic ulcers. Now there are a number of other juices that have been shown at very respected universities to be very helpful in other medical conditions. You know, beet juice. Beet juice can lower blood pressure. That's been shown, and that effect can last anywhere from 8 to 12 hours. So it has really good therapeutic effects. I mean, then you look at all the spices that have possibilities now of being used as medicine, ginger especially. I mean, it's beautiful, David, to be able to go into just about any grocery store and get fresh ginger. I think that's where the real magic is with some of these foods in their fresh form. And ginger is an example of that. And there's a variety of different ways that you can utilize it. You can just grate it up and have ginger tea into some hot water and have the great ginger tea. You can create a ginger shot if you have a juicer that is full of a lot of medicine. And there are over 100 double-blind, placebo-controlled studies showing ginger to be effective in a wide range of conditions, including conditions associated with pain, whether it's due to arthritis or a headache or menstrual pains. Those are some of the double-blind study that have been done with ginger showing significant benefit. It also has great effects on our digestive system, very good for nausea, dizziness. It's really almost a cure-all. Turmeric, which is in the same family, has gotten a lot of press these days, a lot of people getting behind curcumin, the yellow pigment of turmeric. But ginger has some similar benefits, different types of compounds, but still very powerful in their medicinal effects. So, yeah, food is, I really believe the future of medicine is food. I've been following medical research now for almost 40 years, and without question, there's this trend. It's picking up more and more speed, and eventually Hippocrates' words will become part of conventional medicine, because the amount of data that exists now showing how food can heal is strong enough that hopefully it's going to pick up even more steam. The snowball started rolling. I think it's going to turn into a big avalanche, and I think that's the future of medicine, food.
Yeah, I agree. I know these two popular diet trends right now, the paleo and the keto, which both promote eating a lot of red meat. In your book, you share research showing that people that eat a diet rich in plant foods are healthier than those that eat a lower percentage of plant foods. Share with the listeners why the produce section of the grocery store has such health benefits compared to the meat section.
Yeah, our ancestors were primarily plant-based, and I think when we get away from that, we may get some temporary benefits, but it I don't really think it's sustainable for health. When you look at blue zones and where people live long, we see that plant foods appear to be a very critical component. That's because there's so many compounds that are in plants that I think are very important, not only for feeding our body, providing nutrients and then providing protection in the form of phytochemicals that act as antioxidants or work in helping our body reduce inflammation or balance certain hormones. But we are also learning that plant foods are critical for the health of that microbiome. And when we get away from feeding our internal microbiome properly, that's where health really starts to break down. And I just would encourage anyone that is eating a paleo or keto diet not to forego green leafy vegetables in particular, but you know, yeah, try to get those colorful fruits and vegetables in your diet. It's very hard to follow that ketogenic diet and gain a lot of the benefits that are in fruits and vegetables. The intake is restricted so much. Fortunately, a lot of what's being promoted is a ketogenic diet really isn't a ketogenic diet. When we're talking about a ketogenic diet, it's one that promotes ketosis. And in order to promote that state, you really have to severely restrict not only carbohydrates, but also protein. It really becomes a very high fat diet, which I think, again, if you're eating the right types of fat, that may not be bad, but I think that we got to still get those richly colored vegetables and plant foods in our diet.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, I'm curious, what's your opinion on coffee? Some experts say it prevents disease and others say it causes disease. Does Java get the Dr. Murray seal of approval?
Well, here's the thing. One man's food is another man's poison. Looking at the research on coffee, it's really interesting because there's some studies that show that it actually causes heart disease, for example, and others show that it prevents it. And so I think there's an explanation there. There was a study that was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association a few years ago. And what they did was they divided people into either being a slow metabolizer or a fast metabolizer of caffeine groups. And what they found was that the people that were fast metabolizers of caffeine, they actually, if they drank, for example, 2 to 4 cups of coffee a day, they would reduce their risk of having a heart attack by 43%. So that's great. That's better than just about any drug or any other dietary program. So that made, if you just looked at that population, that was really good. But they also looked at the influence of coffee and caffeine in people that were slow metabolizers. And what they found was is if those people drank 2 to 4 cups of coffee a day, they actually increased their risk of having a heart attack or stroke by 253%.
Wow.
So 2.5 times greater risk, same food. And that's what we're learning is that it really depends upon the person a lot of times. And how do you know if you're a fast metabolizer or a slow metabolizer of caffeine? Well, there are laboratory tests that can do that. But most people that are slow metabolizers of caffeine know it because when they drink a cup of coffee, it kind of triggers the stress response and they feel nervous or anxious. They may not sleep well. They may have good energy at first, but if they keep drinking coffee on a daily basis, it actually increases their feelings of fatigue and malaise. So they're not getting what people that are a fast metabolizer of caffeine. And we've all seen these people. They can have a double espresso late at night and sleep great.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a slow metabolizer of caffeine. If I had a double espresso, even during early in the day, I'm going to be shot because I'm not going to be able to sleep. It just amps me up too much. So
you'd be talking like an auctioneer. You'd be like, hey, you'd be answering like that. I'm like, hey, calm down, cut back on the Java. But I love that. What I love the poison analogy because you know I share the same views on that. Some people drink coffee and immediately you feel your heartbeat in your throat. You get nervous, heart race, and you know you're just anxious. And why do you do that every day? If coffee doesn't
it takes something like cilantro. I got turned on to this a few years ago, many years ago. About 10 to 15% of people, when they eat cilantro, it tastes like a stink bug just went off in their mouth. It tastes like soap. They get a different taste sensation than the other 85% of people. So they hate cilantro, and I, you know, I. I love cilantro. I couldn't understand that. And how they were describing what it tastes like, I was like, well, how can that be? Well, you know, we're all different. We have this biochemical individuality. And I think, again, food is going to be the future of medicine. And we're going to better know which foods are best for a person and be able to be much more specific in our dietary recommendations. It really is that one man's food is another man's poison.
So true. You know, we talk about coffee, how it affects certain people, but what about food intolerance? It's more prevalent today than ever. And why do you think people have gotten so sensitive to food that they used to be able to eat with no problem, and now they eat this food and they have some of these symptoms we're talking about?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One of my thoughts on that is that typically, as many people age, there's a reduction in the secretion of pancreatic enzymes, digestive enzymes.
Right.
And so they're not breaking down their food properly. I also think there's a lot of things in our foods these days that block the action of our internal enzymes. And that's why, you know, I think people get so great results with enzyme supplements. I work as a chief science officer for Enzymedica. We're the leading enzyme experts in North America, and our lead product is Digest Gold, which, if you listen to the testimonials and personal experiences that people have when they use this product, it's fantastic for gas, bloating, indigestion, when you want to have an improved digestive function, this is kind of the number one go-to supplement. And anyway, so we see great results with it, and it got me really thinking about, well, why, theoretically, our own enzymes should be able to break down the food just as well. And the problem that people are having with food intolerances is they're just not breaking down the food component properly, whether it's lactose or gluten or some of the compounds in beans and vegetables or milk protein, whatever. The enzymes just aren't working properly in our system. So I started thinking, well, why is that? And the answer is that enzymes exist, digestive enzymes in particular, exist in either an active form or an inactive form. And a lot of these components in our foods, wrong types of fat, pesticides, herbicides, food additives, too much salt, too much sugar. These are enzyme inhibitors. So we're not breaking down the food. Enzymes are molecules that break down large food particles into smaller particles. And if we're not breaking down those food particles into the smaller particles, yeast and bacteria start breaking them down. And that leads to a cascade of effects that aren't good. And that's why we're seeing so many people with digestive issues. Over 100 million Americans that have regular digestive issues. And
The Enzymedica. I was going to ask you about that. If somebody has a food intolerance and they take these enzymes, do they need to be on them a few weeks and then try a little bit of the food that bothered them before, or take it before the food and just go right away into it?
Yeah, it really depends on the type of food intolerance. For example, lactose. Most people are familiar with lactose.
Right, right.
This is a sugar in milk. And if you are lacking the enzyme lactase, or maybe your intestines have been a bit inflamed, you're not going to be able to break down that lactose, and it's going to cause gas, bloating, and maybe even diarrhea. In those people, boy, because it's such a simple molecule, they can take a lactase enzyme product and then have a glass of milk. As long as they took enough of the enzyme, they're not going to have any problem digesting that lactose. But about 80% of people that have lactose intolerance also have intolerance to some of the proteins in milk. So if those people, they're not going to see the same sort of complete relief as someone who just had a pure lactase insufficiency. So that's why at Enzymedica, in our products designed for lactose intolerance, we also include proteases that break down the milk proteins, because we want people to get complete relief. So usually, in people with milk intolerance, not talking about the fixed allergy, but just an intolerance, they can go right to the enzymes and continue to eat the food. Someone who has a more complex food intolerance, like a gluten sensitivity, there are enzymes available that can help break down gluten, but it's really best for small amounts of gluten that may be just kind of a contaminant in foods or just in very low levels. It's not like you can take a gluten enzyme and then have a big bowl of spaghetti and you know, be able to tolerate it if you're gluten sensitive, especially. But most people can really feel the difference with these digestive enzymes. And I think it's because the problem that people are having with food isn't so much the food in many cases, it's their ability to break down that food so it doesn't cause these symptoms that is the real issue.
That's great. I know we talked the couple minutes we have left. I wanted to find out. We talked about the foods that are good. I'm curious, what do you consider public enemy number one when it comes to disease causing food or accelerating aging? What food should we stay away from?
You know, nothing that would be new, you know, high sugar, especially. I think sugar is public enemy number one. More people are probably dying as a result of too much sugar than, you know, smoking these days. I mean, we're just eating way too much of it. But I really think that from a global perspective, the greatest threat to our health right now in terms of food is this ever-increasing polluted world that we're living in. And there's so much data that's coming out showing the harmful effects of many of these contaminants in our food, pesticides, herbicides, heavy metals. You know, these are huge issues that we have to address, and we have to clean up our food supply.
I agree.
I think that's the greatest threat to us long term.
Yeah, I agree. When people say, you know, what's the deal with food? I say, it's not food that's the problem. It's what's inside your food, what's wrapped around your food, and sometimes what you're cooking your food on that's the problem. Like you said, it's these chemicals. We've kind of really destroyed our great food that our great-grandparents once ate. And, you know, they're still available, but you got to play detective. You got to really look at labels. You got to eat pure. You got to eat organic and certain foods. So I agree with you. You know, interesting, I had Dr. Earl Mendel on the show, and he's the author of the number one international best-selling book, The Vitamin Bible. And I asked him, how much of the information he wrote in The Vitamin Bible back in 1981 is considered obsolete today? His answer, all of it is considered outdated information compared to what we know today. If we fast forward 30 years from now, I believe your book, The Magic of Food, will stand the test of time, because food has been, is, and always will be the key to attaining optimal health. Do you agree?
Wow, you just put shivers up my spine. Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. We're on the right track here, David, and I appreciate your perspective as well. We share the same perspectives. We have different communication styles. Yours is much more fun and engaging.
No, you're a blast. We're a blast. Well, fantastic. I hope everybody gets this book. I want to thank you so much. Like I said, you're a mentor of mine. I've been a fan for, geez, 3 decades. I'm showing my age, but I'm not showing your age because you stand the test of time. You look great. That's great. Well, thanks for sharing such great information. To get your copy of The Magic of Food or want to learn more about Dr. Murray, go to drmurray.com. And while you're there, be sure and sign up for his free newsletter so you can stay up to date on all the latest health news. Also, check out his extensive video and article library. Some great information there. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at Dr. Michael Murray. And for my daily tweets and posts, follow me at Dr. David Friedman. If you heard something today from Dr. Murray that you just want someone else to hear, they should hear this information, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at toyourgoodhealthradio.com. And while you're there, peruse our podcast library and share segments of interest with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. This information is too important to keep to yourself. So share. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iHeartRadio and iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.